What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Closing the Deal. I am your host, Sam Enright, and today we are doing a solo podcast, a second ever solo podcast. Going to be talking about something that I'm definitely really passionate about, something I'm very excited to talk with you guys because I see it as being one of the largest pain points for people out there, and I think it's ultimately going to be a huge help for you guys, because this is not information that we're taught, you know, in school. And most people that I talk to have learned in trial by fire and just having to go through making the mistakes, learning from them, and kind of digging themselves out of that hole. So I'm hoping that with this episode, I will catch some of you guys early enough to avoid some of these pitfalls that people usually get themselves into. And if not, if you're already kind of in that zone, you know, helping you to figure out a way to navigate out of it ultimately. And so what we're talking about today is going to be credit. You know, I kind of, you know, talked about in the very first episode that we ever dropped that, you know, this was something, you know, that I was definitely passionate about and wanted to bring you guys some kind of solo content in regards to it. Because again, you know, as I already said, this is something that is very near and dear to my heart. When we talk with a lot of clients, usually the biggest issue for us not being able to issue pre-approvals and letting people go out and start looking for homes is credit. You know, whether it be bad credit, you know, lack of credit, whatever the case may be, it is something that is very, very common amongst people out there that come and apply for home loans. And, you know, I imagine it's very common for people in general. And, you know, credit is one of those things that we just cannot avoid in life, in my opinion. You can always pay things in cash and do those sort of things. But I think having a good credit score and being able to leverage other people's money, you know, is something that I think is important as a whole. So that kind of takes me into obviously my first point of why credit matters. Credit matters because typically when you want to go buy things, unless you have, you know, lots of money saved up, you know, if you're doing the Dave Ramsey way and you want to pay for everything in cash, that's great. But for a lot of people, most normally, you know, if you want to buy a house, if you want to buy a vehicle, if you want to buy a boat, if you want to, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, you're going to need to leverage credit in order to borrow the bank's money for that item. And, you know, even when you're renting properties or buying properties, you know, they always look at credit, you know, and that's used basically as a system to judge whether or not you are good at paying back your debts that you owe each month. So, you know, that's why credit's important, because there, in my opinion, not really any way to avoid it. Now, there are ways that you can ultimately use credit to really separate yourself. And that's what I'm hoping to kind of get into today. And then obviously for anybody who's kind of gone down that path of making those mistakes, obviously, hopefully we can drop a lot of helpful information in here as well as to kind of how to dig yourself out of that hole. So guys, the very first thing I wanted to talk about was the credit wheel. So for those who are watching on YouTube, I'm going to go ahead and throw that on the screen. For those on audio, I'm going to kind of go through everything. That way you can hear what it is. And so basically the credit wheel is talks about the FICO score and what makes up your FICO score and what are the largest percentages, or basically what is the biggest percentages of things that credit algorithm looks at. So getting started, payment history makes up the largest percent at 35%. That kind of makes the most sense, right? Obviously, your credit score is going to be largely dictated on whether or not you pay your debts back on time. If you are someone who is always 30 days late or 60 days late, 90 days late, you are obviously going to not have a very good credit score, because that is the largest part of the algorithm, is whether or not you make your payments on time. The next largest is 30% for amounts owed. Another word for that would be utilization. So essentially how much of your high credit balance are you using? So let's say you have a credit card that has a $5,000 high credit limit and you are using $4,999 of that, you're going to be using almost 100% of your utilization. And so, you know, we'll obviously talk about that, what the perfect numbers are for utilization, here in a little bit. And then the third biggest part of the credit wheel is your length of credit history. And this is 15%. So length of credit history makes up 15% of your credit score. And this one's kind of self-explanatory. How long is your average length of credit history? Meaning, you know, is it very young, or have you had a lot of credit accounts for a long time? Now, the biggest thing with these is obviously for installment loans, length of credit history is only going to be for a certain amount of time. So if you take out an installment loan and you're supposed to pay it back in 2 years, then that length of credit history is going to end at that 2 year point. That account is no longer going to be open. It's going to be paid and closed. So really the biggest focus here is going to be credit cards. How long have your revolving credit cards been open? Because, you know, we've pulled credit for people that have had accounts open for since 1999 and they still have it open in 2025. So that is obviously going to be a huge factor in your length of credit history, is how long do you keep those accounts that have no end date open. And then the other final two things are new credit, which is 10%, and credit mix, which is 10%. So new credit, obviously, you know, how new are your accounts, those sort of things. And that's also going to be inquiries in there. And then credit mix is going to be basically a mix of different types of credit accounts on your credit, meaning installment loans, revolving, student loans, mortgages, you know, all the different things that report essentially on your credit report. It's going to be, you know, you want to mix, obviously. You don't want to be too heavy. You don't want to have all installment loans that have all been paid off, you know, and no revolving trade lines and that sort of thing. So getting into the first one, kind of more in depth here, guys. So payment history. Obviously, this one I feel is kind of self-explanatory, as it is the most important. You know, payment history makes up the largest percentage of your credit score and is typically going to be the easiest one to make happen. As long as you make a minimum monthly payment every single month, you're never going to be late on your credit. So the credit score or the credit bureaus look at 30-day lates, 60-day lates, 90-day lates. So if you are someone who pays your credit card 5 days after it's due and you have a late fee through Capital One, that is not going to report to the credit bureaus as a 30-day late until you actually truly become 30 days late. So you do have a little bit of a grace period in there. You know, if something happened, if you forgot to make your payment, you know, just, and it just dawned on you, you know, 10 days later, just be sure to get on there and pay it. You know, obviously there is going to be a late fee that is charged by the credit company, but you're not going to get that late payment on your credit until you hit that 30-day mark. So really want to get in there and make sure you make that payment on time. You know, obviously for us, our biggest thing that we tell people is set every single card you have on automatic payment. It's the easiest way to ensure that every single month your payments are going to be made on time. And most of the time, unless you've racked up a huge, obviously balance, for the most part, a lot of credit cards are going to have a $25, $35, $40 minimum payment. And for me, the pain of having to pay that each month, even if you're at your lowest and money's not great, money's tight, is far going to outweigh the pain of having a 30-day late on multiple accounts. Because guys, there is no faster way to drop your credit than not making your payments on time. You know, we've looked at credit profiles that otherwise have been perfect. They have great payment history on every account but one. And let's say that account has a 60-day late as of, you know, February of 2025. It is very likely that that credit score is going to be in the 500 simply because of that 30-day late and that 60-day late. And that is how serious it could be. You can spend years building up a great credit score, and I promise you, you can wash all of that away as soon as you rack up 2 to 3 lates. It could be down in the 500s, and that's how serious it is. So in my personal opinion, even if money is tight, even if you're not in a position where ultimately it makes sense that you can make all of these credit card payments, just at least make the minimum. Make sure that it's taken care of. Make sure that it is not going to report to the credit bureaus as a 30-day late, because again, that damage is not something that is easily overcome. So yeah, that's payment history. Obviously pretty self-explanatory. Just make sure you're making your payments on time. Put in fail safes just in case you don't remember. You know, I've had times where I've even set reminders on my phone for the day of the month that the payment is due. You know, if it's one of those things where money is tight and you're not sure what is going to happen, at least set a reminder. Make sure that you're putting yourself in the position to at least be in the know of when these payments are due, because it is very easy in life to get caught up in other things and kind of forget, you know, that something needs to be paid. So just make sure that that's not you. Make sure either minimum payment or you set some sort of a reminder for yourself to get notified when that payment's due so you can make sure that it's paid on time. The next thing is credit utilization. So another huge one, again, 30% of the total credit score algorithm goes to utilization. Now, Utilization, again, as I kind of explained, is essentially how much of your credit, available credit, are you using? And this is a big focal point for revolving credit specifically, which is credit cards. So, you know, let's take a credit profile. For instance, let's say they have, you know, an auto loan that they've had open for 2 years. They've made all on-time payments. They have four credit cards, and they have a couple of other accounts that have been closed and paid in full. And they're never late on their credit cards, but we get in, we open their credit, you know, pull it, and it comes back middle 600s. And we look at the credit utilization on their cards. And let's say between four cards, they have $10,000 worth of high credit limits, and they're using 8,000 of that total 10,000. That's an 80% utilization rate. And that is likely going to drive the scores to remain in that 600, 700, or low 700s, likely in the 600 range though. You know, we see this very, very often with a lot of clients that have really good credit profiles. They have great length of credit history. They have great payment history, but their utilization is just too high. And so that keeps their credit score in those lower credit score ranges. So when it comes to utilization, the golden rules are if you want to have good credit, below 30% across the cards, across the board. And then if you really want to have great credit, you really want to keep the utilization below 10%. So obviously on that $10,000 total credit limit, you'd want to keep your balance below $1,000. That would be 10%. And you know, I can speak from my own personal experience. You know, I had a time when I had quite a few credit cards that were getting close to being maxed, and my credit hovered around 650, 670 there for a while. I had great payment history. I never was late. I obviously have had, you know, good length of credit history. I mean, 28 years old. So I've had some accounts that have been open for, you know, 7-8 years at this point. And, you know, I just couldn't get past that 700 mark. And so as I started to pay these cards down and get the balances lower and lower, I obviously saw my score start to tick up. And now, you know, I've been in that 700 range while getting those balances below that threshold that I talked to you guys about, 30% for good, 10% for great. So, you know, if you're somebody who's chasing that 800 credit score, obviously there's a lot of components that go into it, but credit utilization is going to be huge for you. Keeping your balances at as close to zero as you can, obviously, is going to greatly benefit you if you're on the hunt for that. Now, it's not to say you can't use, obviously, or hold some balances on your credit cards, but again, try to keep it below that 30% number to really, really manage that utilization and make sure that you're getting the most out of your credit score. Length of credit history. So this is another one that obviously is kind of hard because, you know, the only way to truly build length of credit history is to have credit accounts open for a length of time. So, you know, for people that are younger and just getting into the game of credit, obviously it's hard to build a history when you've had a credit card open for 12 months and you've had an auto loan open for 16 months. You know, length of credit history is not going to be on your side. And that's why obviously it makes up a smaller percentage than amounts owed and payment history. But it is important. And the number one thing that we always like to tell people is never, ever close your credit card accounts. Having that length of credit history be as long as possible is a benefit to you. And as soon as you close that credit card account, that account closes. And so that history, you know, now goes and looks at all the open accounts. And so if you had a credit card that had 8 years of open and it closes, so that goes away, you know, now it's going to look at the active trade lines that you do have. And let's say the average age gap or the average age for those credit accounts is 1 year. Obviously, getting rid of that 8 year drove that average back down. And so that's one way that we have seen that it can hurt the credit score a little bit. So again, you don't have to keep balances on your credit cards. That's not what I'm saying. You know, a good general rule of thumb is for us is, you know, we use basically we'll go and spend a little bit of money every couple of months on the credit card, pay it off just to show the credit lender, basically either the bank or, you know, your Capital Ones, your Discovers, that you are still actively using the card. I have actually had a credit card close on me due to inactivity. I paid off the balance and I don't believe I swiped it for 6 months and they closed it. So obviously every creditor is a little different. Some will leave it open for longer without you using it, but it's always just a good rule of thumb, in my opinion, to go spend a little bit of money every couple of months on it, pay it off. And again, it doesn't have to be anything crazy. I'm not saying go out, buy yourself a new TV or do anything crazy like that. I've used it on things like on a dinner. If I haven't spent money on that credit card in a couple of months, I'll just go out. You know, we'll have dinner one night, 20, 30 bucks at Chipotle, swipe it, pay it off. Good. A little bit of utilization on there to show the creditor that it's still open, active, and that I'm using it. And just doing that here and there obviously is should be enough. I have done that for several of my credit cards and they have continued to stay open for several years now. So that is one way that I would go about it. Again, just a little bit of money here and there, you know. And something else I discovered that I'm playing around with myself personally, and this is just kind of a personal, you know, thing that you could do if you wanted to, is I'm actually looking at like my Netflixes or any sort of subscriptions that I am paying on a month-to-month basis. I have actually started putting those on some of my more inactive credit cards that I don't use very often, and then just setting up that automatic payment to pay that balance every single month. That way, once a month, that credit card's getting used on something I'm already spending my money on my debit card with. And then every month I'm paying that balance off, avoiding the interest. And so that's been a cool way, or just kind of something I came up with something I thought of and just said, hey, you know, maybe this is a good way to kind of keep these accounts open. Because again, some of these credit cards I've had open for 5 years now, and I don't want them to close. I want to continue to build that length of credit history. That way, you know, when I get in my 30s, you know, I have had accounts that have been open for, you know, 10, 15 years at that point. And so just to build that overall strength of credit profile. So something to keep in mind, something to look at when it comes to length of credit history, just two things that I would do, you know, still make sure that you're using those accounts. You know, again, doesn't have to be large purchases, but just using them whenever you have an opportunity or feel like you should. And then ultimately you could look into kind of what I've been doing, you know, some of the subscriptions that you're paying for month to month, you know, that are automatically coming out of your bank account. You know, maybe look at putting those on a credit card, setting up that automatic payment. That way each month you're showing a little bit of utilization there, and showing the creditor that you still are using that account here and there. So it doesn't close. Credit mix. So credit mix is obviously just, you're going to look at your credit and kind of see what kind of mixed bag of trade lines you have. Now, you know, a great example of this is, you know, I actually pulled credit for a lady, I believe about 2 weeks ago, and her credit, she only had three accounts, but none were revolving. So no credit cards. Two of them were paid off and one was active. It was just an active installment loan. No late payments or anything like that. But I, you know, the credit score was in the high 600, you know, so not terrible, but you know, obviously not in a place for you to get to those 700s or even that 800 if you are trying to get up that high, you know. And so having a mix of credit is going to be extremely beneficial for you. So I'm not, you know, obviously having installment loans, you know, getting an auto loan, you know, those sort of things are fine. But, you know, we found in our time that revolving credit is a huge, huge driver of your credit score. And being able to manage revolving credit in a way that, you know, signifies that you can borrow money against yourself and pay it back is, again, going to be a great way to boost that credit score and show the algorithm that you are capable of again, borrowing money and paying it back. You know, and I think credit cards ultimately are a little bit of, you know, untapped, because ultimately what happens is a creditor sends you a card in the mail. They say you can spend up to $5,000. And now it's kind of, well, what are you going to do with it? And the algorithm and everybody just kind of sits back and watch. Are you going to be the type of person who gets a $5,000 credit card and goes out, buys themselves a new TV, you know, buys themselves the latest gadgets that they've just been wanting, you know, sits on a $4,000 balance and makes minimum payments each month? Or are you going to be the type of person who, you know, goes out, spends a little bit of money here and there on the card, pays it off each month, you know, and maintains relatively low of a balance, you know, and ultimately you are going to be, you're going to be given a score based on whatever you are in that, whichever category you fall in. So if you're somebody who holds a higher balance, you know, ultimately you're posing more of a risk. That's how the banks look at it. You know, you're posing more of a risk. You've taken the almost the entirety of the 5,000 credit line that they gave you and gone out and spent it on things that obviously you can't necessarily afford to pay back that very next month, you know, and so it's going to usually be a driver of having your score a little bit lower. Vice versa, if you're somebody who can go out, borrow money and pay it back every month, you know, you're clearly showing the creditors and the credit bureaus that you are capable of borrowing money against yourself and paying it in a timely manner. So just something to keep in mind there with the credit mix, obviously adding some sort of you know, different types of credit is always important. You know, we do see a lot of clients again that have those installment history, but they just don't have that revolving credit account history. So getting some revolving accounts on there is definitely important. New credit inquiries. So when it comes to new credit inquiries, there's a little bit, you know, there's different types of inquiries out there. There's going to be your hard pulls and your soft pulls. So, you know, companies like Credit Karma, they do a soft pull every month, and that's why you're not getting, or I guess maybe every day, you know, Credit Karma is not doing hard pulls on your credit. And that's why they are able to update your credit for you so frequently without you getting a bunch of inquiries on your credit. And then hard pulls obviously are typically done by mortgage lenders such as ourselves or banks when you go shop for auto loans or when you go apply for new credit cards or really new credit in general. They're going to essentially do a hard pull on your credit to verify kind of, you know, your history. Take a look at it, see if you're somebody that they feel comfortable lending money to, and they feel like they're going to be able to get that money back. So, you know, a lot of people get hung up on hard inquiries. And again, that would be kind of in that 10% category with the new credit inquiries. Yes, sometimes you are going to see some dips in points because of that, but it's usually blown very, very far out of proportion. You know, the problem is a lot of people, what they'll do is they'll monitor Credit Karma and Credit Karma will say they'll have a 720 credit score, you know, and let's say we pull their credit and it's a 680. And then they'll, you know, because we pulled a hard pull, they'll get on Credit Karma and Credit Karma will show, you know, that they're at a 690 now. And they'll say, well, you guys dropped my credit 30 points because of your hard pull. Well, Credit Karma was obviously not reporting accurately in the first place. So was the hard inquiry really the reason for the drop, or did, you know, Credit Karma update to a more accurate figure for your credit score? And that's typically usually what will happen. So, I mean, you know, when it comes to hard inquiries, again, I think a lot of people get caught up in that and, you know, they're really worried about that. But again, it plays such a small portion of your credit score. You know, I've honestly never really worried about credit inquiries. You know, if, you know, you go out and apply for something, I'm not worried about a 3-point dip because it's going to go back up. Now, if you're like a serial, you know, hard inquiry person, like every month you're applying for something new, you know, that might be a little bit different if you're just constantly getting new inquiries on your credit. But for most people out there, you know, you want a new credit card every 12 to 18 months, you know, one hard inquiry for that credit card's not going to kill your credit score. You know, if you want to go apply for a home loan, you know, it's not going to kill your credit score. And that actually gives me a great segue into kind of hard inquiries when it comes to these larger purchases. So a lot of people freak out because obviously when you do get hard inquiries or when you are shopping, you know, they're concerned with multiple banks or multiple lenders pulling their credit. So I've heard different time frames, but it is widely understood that when you are shopping for a loan in a specific category, so let's say an auto loan or let's say a mortgage, you are allowed, again, the time zone's a little different. I've heard 14 days and I've heard 30 days, but basically inside of that period, you are allowed as many inquiries and it will only hit you for one singular inquiry. And obviously this is due in the fact that, you know, the credit bureaus don't want to shy people away from shopping. So, you know, if you go out and you're interested in a car and you're going to 7 different banks in a week time period to get, you know, different quotes for how much the loan would, you know, how much the rate and their loan would be, don't worry about having 7 different inquiries on your credit. It's only going to hit you for one singular inquiry. Now the inquiries will show up, but it's not going to hit you again for points wise with 7 different hard inquiries. Same thing for mortgages and those sort of things. If you are, again, shopping in the same category. Now, if you go get an auto loan, you know, inquiry, and you go get a mortgage inquiry in the same week, that is going to count as 2 separate inquiries. So something to just keep in mind there, again, because we do have a lot of people that, you know, it's important to shop. And so, you know, they do that to, you know, not keep people away from doing that. So don't be too worried about hard inquiries. They are, you know, again, unless you are doing multiple every month, you know, that sort of thing. But if you're on a normal schedule where, you know, once every 12 to 18 months, you're applying for something new and you get a hard inquiry, it's not something to worry about, in my opinion. And so monitoring your credit, this is kind of, it's a little bit different for everybody. So obviously most people are aware of, you know, the free services out there. So like Experian has their own where you can monitor your Experian score, and then TransUnion and Equifax are both on Credit Karma. So those are all free services that allow you to kind of keep a general overview of your credit. The biggest issues with those is obviously, as I kind of talked about with Credit Karma, they are not, it's not always overly accurate when it comes to score. It's a great way, in my opinion, to monitor balances. If you have a good bit of money on a credit account and you're going to apply for something, you really want to pay that balance down. You know, it's a great way to monitor when the credit bureaus actually update that information. But when it comes to score, I mean, we've seen people, very rarely will I see a client who's exactly on where their Credit Karma says. Usually it's going to be about 30 to 40 points one way or the other. So we've seen Credit Karma be lower than their actual credit score, and we've seen them be higher than your actual credit score. I'm going to be just completely honest with you. Most typically, we do see that people are coming in lower than where Credit Karma is at. But again, we always tell people, don't get married to these apps. I mean, don't get married to the credit score. I actually went on a credit webinar the other day, and I found out something pretty interesting. There's over 38 different credit scoring models right now. And so obviously each entity is going to use a different credit scoring model just depending on what they're looking for. So like Credit Karma, they use, you know, I think one of the advantage, you know, one of the 1 to 9.0s that they offer, you know, and so you really have to think about that as well. Each credit score algorithm, you know, each creditor is using a different credit score algorithm. And when there's 38 out there, you know, there's obviously going to be some differences in your credit score across the board. So just keep that in mind. Never get too married to the credit score that you see on one of those apps, because again, they are soft pulls, they're free services. And so, you know, it is a great way to monitor, but not necessarily something to get married to. If you did want to get married to, or if you did want to figure out kind of a better idea of your credit score, myficoscore.com is one out there that you can actually go sign up for a subscription service. I believe it's somewhere around 20, 30 bucks a month, and you can actually get your credit report and monitor it that way. So there are paid services out there that will allow you to get more accurate depictions of your credit. So I guess it just depends on where you're at. If you're somebody who, you know, is making your payments on time, your utilization's low, those sort of things, you know, I guess the only thing would be to just kind of monitor, you know, whether or not collection accounts pop up or those sort of things coming about, because those can get you in a little bit of trouble, obviously, if you have collections out there and you're unaware of them. Because for me personally, I know I believe I have a medical collection on my credit, but Credit Karma does not show that on my actual credit report on Credit Karma, but I do believe that it's there. You know, it's one of those things. You know, if you were to pay for a service, you could probably get something more accurate. But again, it's up to you. So building and rebuilding credit, you know, typically when we talk with clients, obviously they're coming to us because they want to buy a house. And so, you know, building and rebuilding credit, you know, two different things. I always like to tell people that come to us and have no credit score that they're kind of like a blank canvas, and, you know, the options are limitless ahead of them. And so you really, when you're at that point of having no score, you really get to dictate where things are going to go. And I think that's pretty awesome. I mean, obviously if you already have a built great credit score foundation, that's awesome as well. But, you know, if you don't yet and you come across some of this content, or you get to talk with lenders such as ourselves who actually take the time to kind of discuss these things with people and help them, then, you know, you get to be in a place where you can actually take advantage of having no credit history and do the right things to build yourself a great credit history. So there's a lot of awesome services out there now that do actually credit builder stuff, because I'm going to be honest, you know, if you go to like a Capital One, you go to a Discover with no credit score, it is kind of hard to get into the game if you have no score whatsoever. So there's websites out there like Self.Inc is one. Kickoff is another. They are credit builder, basically credit builder services that kind of have just unique selling propositions for each of them. And they kind of get you started in the game and can kind of get that credit to populate. So one thing I would say is that I have come to find that you do need at least 6 months of a trade line reporting before it will generate a score, at least on the scoring model that we use, which I believe we use the FICO Classic for our own you know, credit scoring model for mortgages in our company. That's what we use. So we have seen that if you have a trade line, but it hasn't been open for 6 months yet, you do not have enough credit history for a score to populate. So just know that if you are somebody who has no credit history whatsoever and you want to buy something, you want to buy a house, you are going to need to open an account and have that open for 6 months before a credit score will populate. Now, I'm going to give you guys a little bit of, I guess, extra sauce, as some might say here. And this is a way that you can kind of get past that 6 month. And this is something that we'll usually tell people if you are, you know, if you're looking to move very fast and you have no credit score, there is something called piggybacking. What that is basically you become an authorized user on somebody else's credit account. And what will happen is the credit bureaus will take that and they will report that on your credit. So let's say, for instance, you have, you know, a family member or a friend. And again, I just want to add this caveat in here. This obviously needs to be someone that you trust to take care of their finances, to take care of their, you know, their things, because whatever happens with this account will reflect on your credit as well. So basically what will happen is you can go in and you can go to your credit card servicer. So let's say you have Discover, there will be an option in your settings where you can go to authorize user. And let's say you wanted to add a friend to this account and you would go in, put their information. And what it's going to do is it's going to add them as an authorized user. It's going to mail you a card for them. And now that trade line, after 30, 45 days, you know, once you've added them, because it usually takes a credit cycle for these things to report, it will show that trade line on that person's credit. Couple of things with that. With the card specifically, you know, you don't have to give that card to that person to use if you don't want to. They are obviously, they don't have to be responsible for the payment or anything like that. So I will say my fiance and I, a couple of years back, I added her as an authorized user on one of my cards to help kind of boost her credit. That card I had open for 5 years at that point. It had a very low balance and a good, solid, high credit limit. And so I added her as an authorized user, sent me the card in the mail. I just shredded the card. And now that account has been reporting on her credit ever since. And so the reason that this works is because obviously, let's say for that card, for example, that card already had a 5 year payment history that I built up on it. And now as soon as it goes onto the person who has no credit scores credit account, it's going to give them a credit card, report a credit card that is, you know, theirs, but not theirs on their credit that has a 5 year history. So that is automatically going to get them to leapfrog that 6 month requirement because they have an account that has been reporting for 5 years and generate a credit score for them. So I know my dad did that for my sister when she was, you know, coming out of high school, couldn't get approved for any credit cards because she had no credit score, added her as an authorized user, got her to generate a credit score. And then she was able to start applying for her own trade lines at that point. So again, it's just something that is it's a powerful tool depending on the situation you're in. But again, caveat to that is anything that happens to that card is going to report on your credit. So again, you want to make sure it's somebody you trust. We have seen situations where not to our direction, but we've seen, you know, clients who come to us and we pull their credit and they have authorized user accounts with other people. And that authorized user account has a $14,000 high credit limit with a $13,000 balance. And so their utilization's through the roof. And so their credit score is lower. Or we've seen authorized user accounts where the true account holder has made late payments or has been late. And now that's reporting on the person who is piggybacking on that card's credit. So anything that happens with that card, good or bad, is going to report on your credit. So you really, really want to make sure that if you do this system, that it is with somebody that you trust, somebody that you know is going to handle their finances properly and not going to put you in a situation where they screw up your credit, you know, that sort of thing. So just something to keep in mind. Again, it is something that we have used in the past, but it is very nuanced and just want to make sure you're doing it with somebody you trust. That's the biggest thing. As it comes to fully rebuilding credit, you know, everybody's situation is a little bit different. It depends on where you're at and how bad the credit is. If you're somebody who has, you know, a total of 15 accounts and 10 of them have late payments or derogatory remarks, or you have five that have gone to charge off collection, in my opinion, you know, obviously we are in the mortgage business. I'm not in the credit repair business. So I would, you know, sends you to somebody who is a little bit more professional in actually truly rebuilding credit scores and those sort of things, because there's ways that you can do it, but it takes a professional who knows a lot more about that stuff than me. So, you know, if you're somebody who's kind of on the edge, you know, if you have a lower credit score because of one late payment a year ago and you just have high credit utilization, we'll obviously, you know, talk to you about that and just say, hey, we think, you know, utilization, if you get that down, you could get your score back up over 600, maybe into the middle sixes and those sort of things. So ultimately, it just really depends on where you're at in the rebuild process. You know, how much credit rebuilding do you need? But hopefully, you know, if you guys listen to this episode and take, you know, these things from the credit wheel and those sort of things and apply it, you know, avoid paying late payments, avoid high utilization, you guys are not going to have to worry about rebuilding your credit score. So that's obviously the biggest thing. Avoiding common credit mistakes. So, you know, again, for most people, that's late payments that we see and high utilization. Those are the two. The other thing would be, you know, closing credit accounts. You know, I've talked to people that, you know, have credit cards, will be like, hey, you should pay this balance down. And then they'll text us or call us and say, hey, yeah, I paid the balance down and I closed the account. And we're just like, you didn't need to close the account. You know, you don't have to make a payment on a credit card that has zero balance on it. It can still be open and you not pay on it, you know, if there's no balance. So just avoiding those, just those kind of things. Obviously, late payments are the big one. Got to make sure you're making your payments on time, no matter what. But yeah, that would be kind of the three biggest things. And then, you know, also another common mistake that we see, and this is for collections in general. So we have clients who will come to us and they have collections. You know, a common one is utility companies. I know Spectrum's bad, typically because, you know, when you either rent or own and you go turn in your Spectrum equipment, it does not sound like they have a great system for tracking that. And so a lot of people will get collections on their credit because Spectrum will say, oh, we never received your modem and your router that you turned in and you owe us money for that or whatever else. But with these collections, the biggest thing that we see is people will just go pay them. And that's not the proper way to go about collections, because what will happen from a credit score standpoint is, let's say you have a collection that's been on there for 5 years. The last time it updated was 5 years ago, and it's just been sitting there. It shows as an unpaid balance. Well, if you go pay that, not only is that going to show a paid balance, but the date of reporting is going to update to current day. So now it's going to show the collection is not 5 years old, it's going to show it's brand new because of the reporting date. And so that can get you in a little bit of trouble there. And also, the biggest thing is that when you pay a collection, it doesn't leave your credit. It doesn't go away. It just shows that the balance is zero now. So what we try to help our clients do is what's called a pay for deletion. And I believe we talked about this in one of my Mortgage Monday videos on my Instagram, but a pay for deletion is essentially where you contact the creditor, either if it's now been transferred to a collection agency or if it's still in the hands of the original creditor, you can call them and say, hey, Mr. So-and-so, I noticed I still have this collection. I would love to pay this off and get you guys all squared away. But, you know, I want a pay for deletion letter. I want your word that once I pay this balance in full, you will remove this from my credit report entirely. And that's going to be the biggest key, obviously, for you guys, because if you can get the collection account gone in its entirety, there's no longer that derogatory remark on your credit. And that's going to go way further than just having a zero balance, you know, credit or collection account. You know what I mean? So just something to keep in mind there. That would be kind of my suggestion on how to go about that. You know, some creditors are going to be willing to do it, others are not. But, you know, before I would go pay anybody money for any sort of collection, I would definitely be calling and having a conversation with them about pay for deletion and getting something in writing, you know, stating that they will delete that. That way you can hold their feet to the fire if you pay it off and they don't delete it from your credit account. So yeah, I mean, those are kind of the biggest things. You know, credit in my own personal experience, you know, I've had lots of ups and downs. You know, I've kind of gone through, you know, kind of like how I said for you guys, trial by fire. I've had good times with credit. I've had bad times with credit. But ultimately, the biggest thing, you know, for me is making sure that my payments are always made on time. I don't have any late payments on my history. You know, I have had several times of high utilization on my credit. You know, just different things going on in my life and just dumb mistakes made as a kid and everything else. But ultimately, you know, if you can take care of your credit, it'll take care of you. It'll be a way for you to leverage, obviously, you know, several different things. You can buy homes, you can buy, you know, boats, you can buy cars, you can really have the ability to kind of go out and buy whatever it is that you want. So it's something, again, that I think is very, very important and not a lot talked about out there. You know, again, we're not taught this in school. Your teachers are not going to talk to you about it, you know, and depending on what kind of family background you come from, if you come from a background of family who is always had historically low credit scores and they don't know how to get out of that, then they're obviously not going to be able to teach you how to get that credit score back on track. You know, and so, yeah, it's just, it's important stuff. And so that's why obviously it's something that I thought was a great episode to give you guys today. And yeah, well, I think that's it for me, guys. I think that's all. It's been about 40 minutes here. So I appreciate you all listening. If you've made it to the end, really appreciate you. Cause again, this is something I genuinely care about, and I care about people taking care of their credit score and doing the best with what they can. So hopefully this information is something you guys found valuable, something you can use and take right away and go apply it. You know, go look at your credit cards, go look at, you know, what's going on. Hey, do you have too high a utilization? You know, what about your credit history? You know, making sure that those accounts stay open, that sort of thing. There's things that you can apply right now. So hopefully you guys found the information very helpful. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Obviously, all the love and support you guys have shown us so far with all of our episodes of Closing the Deal has been remarkable. Keeps us going, keeps us having fun with it, you know, trying to find new topics and new ways to provide value for you guys. And it's been a fun journey so far. So yeah, appreciate all you guys for tuning in. You guys can catch this episode, you know, where you normally get your podcast, YouTube, if you guys want to check us out on video and audio, and then obviously Apple and Spotify, if you guys want to check us out there as well. So really appreciate y'all. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you guys on the next episode.